Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Do you love unraveling a good old-fashioned whodunit? Oh, honey, me too. I'm Alicia, armchair detective and host of Dead On, a true crime podcast. Join me every Friday. We'll dive into a case that scratches your itch for true crime, dark history, and mystery. Streaming now, everywhere you love to listen.
And welcome to Bad Axe Podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Blinka.
And I'm your co-host, Aaron.
Bad Axe is brought to you by the Podmoth Media Network. Check out Podmoth for more great podcasts. You can support the show and get 2 whole years worth of bonus episodes over at patreon.com/badaxepod. Additionally, you get ad-free, sort of early episodes. There's a link in our show notes, and the memberships start at $1. At the $1 level, you get an exclusive mini bonus episode every month. At the $5 level, you get the mini episode plus a full-length bonus episode. And if you go for our $10 level, you also get our recent crimes rundown episode, which is epic. Every single month, we cover a set of cases, so that's pretty exciting. We also now have a subscription through wherever you listen to podcasts. It's through Buzzsprout, which is our platform. You will be getting our mini and full-length bonus episodes every month for $5 a month. And we're going back through and posting our backlog a couple at a time so that y'all will also have access to those as well. So that's a nice alternative to Patreon if you would just like to do it through your platform that you listen to. Or you can go to the Patreon. It technically has a little bit more benefits over there. We do have some new patrons and subscribers, and I'm going to write down your names and give you a shout out next episode. Just this last week has been a little festive. If you do not want to subscribe to our feed and you still want to support the show for free, go ahead and leave us a positive review and tell a friend about us. Now on to today's case. Today, we are going to Annapolis, Maryland, in November 2017. Annapolis is a lovely East Coast city located on the Chesapeake Bay, where it meets the Severn River. Ooh.
That's a cool name for a river.
I know. It also looks like it's on the ocean, but the Chesapeake Bay kind of goes up in between part of Maryland. Kind of interesting there. And the city of Annapolis is home to around 40,000 people, so it's about a medium-sized city. Annapolis is a colonial city, so it is home to a lot of historical events. I was unwilling to compile fun facts because they just are also depressing facts. It's kind of a give and take whenever you talk about any kind of historical events in the colonial cities. So I decided just not to do them. In 2017, Annapolis was also the home of 43-year-old Megan Tillman. Megan had 2 children, an older daughter named Paris, who I believe was around an adult at this time, but I couldn't find her exact age, and a school-aged daughter named Grace. Grace was between the ages of 5 and 7. Her age gets reported differently in a few different spots. Megan loved her children dearly. In fact, she loved all children. Her lifelong dream was to open a daycare center where she could basically spend all day caring for kids. Megan's family said that she was a giving person with a big heart, and she trusted people to a fault. According to them, she also had a minor intellectual disability, so she was prone to believing people's lies. At the time, Megan was dealing with a super stressful situation. Her mom was ill and needed constant care. So Megan lived with her in a rented townhome on Rockwell Court in Annapolis. But mother and daughter did not live alone. Megan's boyfriend, 41-year-old William Rice, and her girlfriend, 39-year-old Christina Stallings Harnish, also shared the home with Megan and her mom. They were in a poly relationship, and social media photos made it look like they were all super happy together.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Now, initially, Megan had gotten with William, and they had known each other since middle school, but then reconnected as adults and started living together. And then William, it appears, introduced her to Christina. And Christina was someone that he had known for a very long time. And so they just sort of all hit it off and decided to be in this threesome type relationship. And friends did clarify that it wasn't a situation where William had two girlfriends. Megan told people, "This is my boyfriend William, this is my girlfriend Christina."
Gotcha. So it wasn't a sister-wife situation. It was actual polyamory.
Yes, that was what they were doing.
Nice.
It's unclear exactly how their relationship unfolded, but we do know that it started with just the two of them. William and Christina had known each other their whole lives, and prior to moving in with Megan and William, Christina found herself in an abusive relationship. So moving in with them was actually kind of her way of escaping that abuse from her ex. But this relationship, unfortunately, wasn't so much a give and take like you would hope. Before long, her boyfriend and girlfriend had Megan paying for all their needs using both her money and also her ailing mother's resources.
Oh no, that's not good. Don't take advantage of old people.
Mm-mm. Megan used her money and her mom's money to pay the rent, to pay for her Jeep that she owned, and to pay for all the household expenses. And essentially, William and Christina became mooches in this household. To outsiders, it seemed like William and Christina might be using Megan. And that's pretty much what her family and friends started to see. But Megan did not feel that way. She felt like that she loved them, that she was in this relationship with them, and she didn't mind having to foot the bill. It's possible that William sensed her family's worries, though, because they also started to pick up on something else when it came to that relationship. Megan's family felt like she was pulling away from them, and they attributed this change in her to William. They thought he was coming between Megan and the rest of the family. And I'm sure everyone who's listening is really into true crime. I mean, we're all true crime buffs. And this is pretty much characteristic of an abusive relationship.
Yep.
Where someone is trying to control you and they don't want your family involved because your family is going to usually advocate for your best interest. And the last thing an abuser wants is for your family to show up and help you out of a bad situation.
Yep, that's right.
And regardless of whether or not this is any kind of physical abuse, which it might not have been, but it is appearing that William and Christina were using Megan to have a place to live and to have all their needs met, essentially, and they didn't want anyone getting in between that. Unfortunately, this plan was not going to work out for them, because in late summer of 2017, Megan's family made a fateful decision. Instead of having Megan take care of their ill mom, the family decided to transfer her mom to an assisted living facility. Shortly after this, Megan stopped managing her mom's money because the money was going to the facility instead of to Megan. And Megan disappeared. The last time that someone in her family saw her was September 26th of 2017. At first, they did get a few texts from her here and there, and she also made some posts on social media. There was something weird, though, because they thought that the messages in the post didn't quite sound like Megan, but they also weren't totally worried about her. Because at first, a lot of her family members assumed that she had just gone off somewhere with William and that he wasn't letting her contact them, essentially. That he was still trying to turn her against them, and that's why she would just sporadically send texts and post things. Some people in Megan's family did start to worry right away, though, because she usually talked to her young daughter, Grace, every single day. If you recall, she was really dedicated to her kids. And so when she stopped calling Grace, there were some family members that immediately suspected that something was clearly wrong. But at the same time, nobody was really sure what to do about it because she was a grown woman and nothing seemed to have happened to her, if that makes sense. Like, they didn't go to her house and find, like, a bloody scene or anything like that. So it was just sort of weird at first.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, right?
But their suspicions started to grow as more time passed and no one knew where Megan might be. They started to wonder why she wasn't contacting anyone, especially her two daughters. The family realized something was really wrong when Megan's friends started posting on her Facebook that they hadn't seen or heard from her. They were posting things like, quote, "Megan, are you still alive?" unquote.
Well, that's concerning.
Yeah, that's a whole lot of red flags for everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
So after these posts started, they started talking to each other, the family. And Megan's cousin decided to go report Megan missing on November 1st of 2017. Things got even more alarming when Megan missed a custody hearing in November of 2017. Because since her children were her main focus in life, this was very uncharacteristic of her. Megan had completely disappeared. The Anne Arundel County Police Department distributed missing persons flyers for her, but the clues just weren't coming in. As authorities helped the family search for Megan, they tracked down William and Christina because, again, they had hoped that Megan would be with them. Turns out, William and Christina no longer lived in the area.
Really?
Yeah, but don't worry, they weren't all missing. By that time, William Rice and Christina Stallings Harnish lived in a homeless camp in Pima County, Arizona.
Huh.
Now, if you recall, we're starting out in Maryland. So Maryland to Arizona is quite the trek.
Yeah, that's a long drive.
Yeah. And authorities did determine that William and Christina moved to Arizona around the same time that Megan disappeared.
Well, that's not suspicious at all.
Mm-hmm. So at that point, they really started looking at them. But again, they have no evidence that a crime has occurred. Meanwhile, William and Christina continued to live in that homeless camp for another 4 years following Megan's disappearance.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah. They're basically making no attempt to try to do anything else besides just
live in this camp. Yeah.
Also, fun fact, they used Megan's money to buy a bus ticket to get out of town.
That's also a red flag.
Yeah, a lot of red flags happening. Investigators certainly found all of this suspicious, and Megan's family saw it as a smoking gun clue to their guilt. However, moving to another state after your girlfriend disappears isn't exactly evidence that you can present at a murder trial, or at least it's not evidence that's going to convict you of the murder. During their investigation, police discovered Megan's Jeep abandoned in a shopping center outside of Annapolis in Prince George's County, Maryland, which is one county over from the county where she lived. Suspiciously, the Jeep's location was super close to a bus station.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Not at all suspicious either.
I wonder if we know anybody who has used the bus.
I know, right? Yeah. I wonder how they got to a place called Arizona.
Yeah, it's not exactly a mystery who might have driven the Jeep there. However, again, they can't really prove anything, though, because technically Megan allowed William and Christina to drive this Jeep sometimes. So it's not like it would be weird to find their fingerprints all over it or anything like that. So, again, there's not a lot they can do with that information aside from kind of tuck it in as part of the story that might eventually point to something.
Right, yeah, yeah.
While looking into the Jeep, though, detectives recovered surveillance footage of the Jeep from early October, and this was after the last sighting of Megan. Video footage showed William Rice driving Megan's Jeep to the bank to get money out of the ATM. If you recall, Megan is the only one who has a bank account.
Yep.
So he's literally driving her Jeep to the bank to get money out of her account.
Yeah, definitely suspicious.
Yes. Now, again, this isn't immediately something that they can use to try to arrest him for murder because, again, they don't even know where she is at this point. They don't have, like, a body yet. It is just something, again, to add to the case file in case they can ever prove when she was gone. Because, I mean, again, this withdrawal was made in early October. So they kind of have to figure out, like, what date did she actually disappear? Because in theory, Since the family hadn't seen her since September 26th, she might have disappeared around that time. But it's also possible that she disappeared in late October, since they didn't report her missing till November 1st. So, in theory, you could argue as a defense attorney that he was making the withdrawal for Megan. So, they know this is suspicious, but it's not exactly clear evidence yet.
Yeah, totally.
There is another part, though, that's pretty weird. Authorities also found pictures on Christina's social media that she took of herself driving Megan's Jeep as she went to rehome her pet before she moved to Arizona with William. So at that point, they're like, well, we do have images now of both William and Christina driving the Jeep around after we have Megan disappear. And that's starting to make it look like they've kind of taken over the Jeep and that Megan might not be around anymore.
Interesting.
Bloody FM presents Hometown Ghost Stories, a paranormal podcast that investigates a new town every week, bringing you all the hauntings from haunted houses to castles, bridges to asylums, wandering spirits to demons. Over 100 episodes covering different towns all over the world. Tune in to Hometown Ghost Stories live on YouTube every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern or on any podcast platform and find out if your hometown is haunted.
For about 18 months, no one knew what had happened to Megan Tillman. She had just vanished. Poor little Gracie, her daughter, thought that her mom didn't love her anymore.
Oh.
Yeah, when she stopped calling.
Oh, no.
And her family had to explain to her that her mom had just disappeared. And that it wasn't that she didn't love Gracie anymore.
That's so sad. That's literally heartbreaking.
I feel like that has to be awful as a child.
Yeah.
And so that was a hard moment for the family, because now they've got a sad child in addition to the fact that they're missing Megan.
Yeah.
After Megan disappeared, her daughter Paris also had her own child, a son that she named Cecil. And sadly, her mom couldn't be there to meet him, and she would love to have a grandchild. That was a red flag to her family as well. If you recall, she was really, really, really into children. So having her own grandbaby would have been a huge deal for her. Like, that would have been a dream come true. So it's pretty alarming to them that she didn't want to come around and see baby Cecil. It was torture for the family not to know what happened to Megan. But after a year and a half of searching, her missing persons report finally came across the right desk. Back on October 18th of 2017, 2 weeks before Megan's cousin reported her missing, partial dismembered remains washed up from a waterway near a community called Cedarhurst in Shadyside, which is a census-designated place in Anne Arundel County, so the same county where Megan lived. Initial reports said that this body belonged to an Asian woman, and Megan's family had found out about the body when it was discovered because it made the news and was a kind of a big deal, and they hadn't seen Megan, so they're like, oh no, could that be Megan? But when it was revealed that it was an Asian woman, the family just sort of assumed that it couldn't be Megan, and they just admit now to feeling sorry for this other family that found out their loved one had been murdered. Over time, forensic experts had revised their determination and said that she could be Asian or Caucasian or maybe a mixture. They weren't totally sure based on what they had, because it wasn't a complete body. It was only partial remains. Additionally, they were able to determine that the victim died by homicide. Now, it's not clear if that's because the wound was apparent on the body, or if they just figured this dismembered body didn't die on its own. We're going to go with homicide? That's unclear. But they did figure out that this victim was a homicide victim. At that point, they just needed to match her DNA to the right missing person. Now, as I said before, this body was actually found 2 weeks before Megan was reported missing. Megan's missing person report didn't make it to the same authorities that had that body, if that makes sense. So when she was reported missing, they didn't immediately click in their head, like, we should go ahead and compare her DNA to this body that was found. And the department that had the dismembered body parts didn't get her missing person's report until a year and a half later. So after 18 months of looking for Megan, the right person gets the missing persons report. And at that point, they begin comparing her DNA to the unidentified remains. And that DNA test confirmed that the remains belong to Megan.
Wow, that sucks.
It does. It's also really, really traumatic, I feel like, that they spent 18 months searching for her when she was found before they even reported her missing.
I know. Does that not suck so mm-hmm. much? That is awful.
Although, to be fair, she was mostly found. Because, yeah. again, it wasn't all of her.
Yeah.
After learning that the body belonged to Megan, her aunt, Shannon Perry, said, quote, "If you ever want to know horror, imagine body pieces of a loved one washing ashore," unquote.
She's not wrong.
She's not wrong. That's extremely correct.
Yeah, that would be excruciatingly traumatic for me.
Mm-hmm. For reals. So at this point, authorities know what happened to Megan. Well, mostly. They knew that someone murdered her, and that's why she disappeared. Now, they just needed to figure out who killed her. I don't need to tell most of you that her family was already pretty sure they knew. They were convinced that William and Christina did it for reasons that I feel like all of us feel like are obvious, right? I mean, it seems like they disappeared at the same time. They were using her materials. They just burnt out of town.
Yeah. The Jeep was right next to the bus.
Yeah, the Jeep was right next to the bus. Like, there's a lot of red flags happening here. But at the same time, authorities still have to piece together an investigation.
Yeah, exactly. You need some physical evidence if mm-hmm. you can get it.
Unfortunately, investigators were unable to recover the rest of her body. They were able to find most of her head. It sounded like they were saying that, like, from the chin up. So basically, her neck was missing.
Oh, man.
And also, they found her torso, and they found one of her legs. But that's all.
Wow, that poor thing.
I know, right?
Man, that's so terrible.
They did, however, find some items with Megan's body. And they were able to keep those items as clues to what happened to her. And authorities took those into evidence. Once they identified Megan's remains, investigators had suspicions about William Rice and Christina Stallings Harnish. And while they suspected them, they did not yet have enough evidence to prove that the couple harmed her. But they weren't going to give up. As investigators kept working the case, they asked the public to come forward with clues. The Anne Arundel County Police Department even offered a $10,000 reward for info leading to an arrest. To me, I feel like this is evidence that both of them did it together, because either one of them would have turned the other one in to get the 10 grand if they didn't do anything.
Oh yeah, that's absolutely true.
Like, let's be honest about who we're dealing with here.
Yeah, for real.
For years, Megan's family waited for justice. And finally, investigators made a move on their suspects in 2022.
Nice.
I know.
Took a while, but better late than never, yeah?
From 2017 to 2022. So after 5 years of investigating, they finally arrested William and Christina in Arizona. After their arrest, Megan's father, Jim, said that it felt like a brick had been lifted off his chest. The long years of waiting for justice might finally be coming to an end. In February 2022, Arizona authorities extradited William and Christina back to Anne Arundel County, Maryland. They were scheduled to stand trial in 2023, but they decided to make a deal with the prosecution instead. On January 25th of 2023, William Rice and Christina Stallings Harnish both pleaded guilty to second-degree murder in the Anne Arundel County Circuit Court to avoid having a trial and a longer sentence. According to their best recollections, Megan died on October 3rd, 2017. However, a public defender representing one of them, Dennis O'Connell, told the court that Rice and Stallings Harnish killed Megan in a, quote, drug-induced haze, unquote, which made it hard to know the exact sequence of events.
Wow.
Yeah, you know it's bad when you don't even remember what day you murdered someone.
Yeah, that's really bad. Like, I mean, my memory's not great, but I feel like something that significant would stick in my mind enough that I would remember the fucking day.
Also, how fucked up are you that you murdered someone and you don't feel like, you don't think about it all the time and feel guilty and stuff?
Yeah, that exactly.
That's a huge red flag.
Yeah, that's cold. I mean, like, because you're exactly right. You would think that murder would be something that would eat at you, and you'd think about it all the time.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, so, like, if you're not even thinking about it, it's like,
what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, did that mean nothing to you? Did the person you killed mean nothing to you?
Yeah, and also, maybe you should get the longer sentence because something is wrong with you.
Yeah, I mean, if you care that little about murder once, what's going to stop you from doing it again?
Exactly, when it's convenient for you.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it sounds like. They just killed because they felt like it, and they didn't care.
Megan probably bought them those drugs and alcohol, if we're being honest.
Probably true.
The prosecution theorized, speaking of money, that the reason why the pair killed Megan is that she ran out of money to support them.
Yeah.
Because she didn't have her mom's money anymore. And so she couldn't support the three of them without her mom's income. The couple denies this accusation. They have their own version of events, and I'm going to tell you about that now. They claim that the murder resulted from a fight. According to the couple, Megan began fighting with William over something that happened. They don't remember what, because again, they claim to be under substances here. During that dispute, she allegedly broke his glasses. And this enraged Christina, who says that she attacked Megan, punching her over and over. At that point, William supposedly wrapped his hands around Megan's throat from behind and strangled off her air supply. Christina took this as a cue and then put her hands over Megan's nose and mouth, and together they simultaneously strangled and smothered Megan.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's awful.
I kind of believe that this is how they murdered her, because why lie about that part? Because it doesn't make them look good.
No, it doesn't.
But I don't think it started over just a fight over something that happened. I think the reason why they don't say what happened is because they were mad about the money situation.
Yeah. I think the fight started because they were mad about money.
Yeah, like maybe they asked her for money and she said no, and then they ended up killing her, and then William went and got the money from the bank.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they probably wanted to buy substances.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're addicted to something, it's really hard not to have it. Not that obviously you shouldn't murder people.
Yeah.
But I think that makes more sense. Their own description of events makes that make more sense. It's unclear if Megan definitely died from the strangulation, though, because after she lost consciousness, there's more stuff. William and Christina also admitted to striking her with blunt objects, and they stabbed her with something sharp to make sure that she was dead. And as we know from when her body was found, they also dismembered Megan's body to make it easier to dispose of her. Afterwards, they transported her to the waterway in Prince George's County, and later, some of her dismembered remains washed up back in Arundel County. But some of the remains just were never discovered. According to the couple, they were both high on cocaine and drunk on alcohol at the time they murdered Megan, and they claimed that it was not planned. Which seems like the only part of their story that doesn't sound like a bunch of lies. After killing Megan, the couple sent a few messages from her phone to make it seem like she was still alive, and this partially worked because people didn't immediately think that she was dead. They also made a few posts on social media to try to make it look like she was doing something. With their guilty pleas and their explanation of the crime, Megan finally got justice. After the plea hearing, State Attorney Ann Colt Leitris said, quote, Megan offered friendship, her home, and her trust to Mr. Rice and Ms. Harnish. And when the finances ran dry, they did more than violate that trust. They took her life. It won't bring Megan back, but it is my hope that today's guilty pleas will bring justice to Megan's family, who have long awaited answers for this heinous crime, unquote.
I mean, she's right.
Mm-hmm. I do think she should have also included love, because I think some people were weirded out because they don't understand the polyamory part of this case, but it does appear that regardless of the motives of William and Christina, Megan genuinely loved both of them. And so for her, this was definitely a loving relationship, and she was offering her love to them. I'm not sure if they loved her back, not because of it not being like possible for them to love her back, but just because they both seem like shit faces.
Yep.
And I don't even think they even really love each other. I think they just love themselves.
Yeah.
They seem like they're both kind of two peas in a very selfish pod.
Yeah.
More so than like anything else.
Agreed.
The couple's sentencing hearing occurred on Friday, May 26th of 2023, which is very recently.
Yeah, very recent.
In exchange for their pleas, the court gave them both 40 years in prison. And so that is a shorter sentence than they might have received at trial, but being real, they're both old enough that that's going to keep them in prison for a while because they are in their mid-40s now. So they'll be getting out. I mean, if they serve the whole 40 years, they'd be getting out in their 80s. And I guess if they get parole, they could still get out when they're elderly, but not as young. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, but less likely to be able to commit a violent offense again.
Probably not. I mean, it depends on how fit they keep in prison. I don't know if people work out to be able to commit more crimes or if they just work out for, like, something to do. I don't know. At their sentencing, both Rice and Stallings Harnish apologized for murdering their former girlfriend. William Rice said, quote, "What I've done, there is no taking back. There is no making it right. All I can do is say I'm sorry, and I hope I can pay back everything in karma," unquote. That seems like a wrong choice, bud. Like, don't bring the karma onto you. I mean, I guess that's you already kind of do by having actions, but, like, that also kind of makes me suspect that there's something wrong with him.
Yeah.
That he doesn't really believe in any of this.
Yeah.
Christina Stallings Harnish said, quote, "Sorry doesn't even cover what I'm trying to convey to her family and for their loss. There's no way to make this right, but I will accept responsibility for my part in this," unquote. I don't know. I just...
feels underwhelming.
I don't believe either one of them, partially because they didn't remember exactly what day they killed her, which is a red flag to me. And also they dismembered her. Like, how do you... first of all, we've talked about this a million times on the podcast. I don't understand how people dismember somebody anyway. But, like, also, how do you dismember someone that you're supposed to be in love with?
Yeah, I don't see how you could.
It's just not a thing. It's just not a thing that happens.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't see how that's possible. Like, I couldn't dismember someone that I absolutely hated. Like, if there was someone that I hated. Or someone just truly heinous that, like... I don't know if that makes sense, yeah. But...
or even someone that you didn't know and didn't care about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I could do that to anything.
Yeah, it's gross. And I don't want to do it. So yeah. That's weird to me that, like, they even did this to someone they supposedly loved. Like, the whole thing. And also just, like, strangling her and then hitting her with objects and stabbing at her and stuff. Like, what? That's messed up. It's really messed up. And then also, too, anytime somebody mentions their part in something, sometimes it just feels like they're minimizing it a little bit. Like, they're not taking full responsibility for the whole thing. They're just saying, like, oh, the part that I played. I feel like true remorse, you're taking responsibility for the whole event. Yeah. And not trying to minimize that you didn't do the whole part. You just did one part.
Yeah, that's a very good observation.
That's just how I personally feel about that.
No, I think that's a great point.
As a person who's really into words... it just stood out to me. There was something about Megan and just the fact that, like, she gave so much love to these people and then she was just murdered for literally no reason by two people that she thought that she loved.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine?
I know, that's terrible.
Having this, like, really loving relationship and then it's just fake the whole time.
Yeah, it's such a betrayal.
Yeah, and her family thinks that they were only able to perpetuate this betrayal because she did have such a trusting nature, like, whatever her learning disability was, it made her a more trusting, open person. And that enabled them to kind of walk through that door of the trust and the love to take advantage.
Yeah.
And that's just really jacked up.
Yeah, it is.
Before we go, though, I have to talk about... I just binge-watched the Natalia Grace show on ID, and I am freaking out. Aaron watched part of it with me. I watched most of it without him because I'm evil and selfish and couldn't wait. I cannot believe that these people got away with aging an actual child up to an adult and left her in an apartment. Whenever they revealed that her paperwork and her DNA and everything matched her mom and that all the documentation supported her being an actual child, I was just like, are you kidding me? And the fact that they videoed all this abuse of her, for some reason the parents don't seem to understand that they're literally videoing themselves abusing the child. That part was also confusing. I don't know if this is spoilers. I'm just saying that, like, that documentary messed me up and I need people's thoughts.
Yeah, please share. I mean, it's definitely a crazy case, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's it's so weird. The like one of the things that stood out to me when you were telling me about it is like the judge is like, well, we know that she's an actual child, but we're not going to allow that part into the case.
Oh yeah, or that into the part. Trial. The later right? episodes, whenever they're prosecuting Michael, and the judge is like, oh, you can't mention that you found out that she was really a child that whole time.
Yeah, it's like, how does a jury make an accurate decision about what happened if you don't tell them the truth?
Yeah, you have to tell them the actual, that's the evidence, though. I can understand doing both sides if you're going to do it at all. Like, if you just feel like you have to include that she was legally this age, okay. But, like, there's also documentation that she was a child, and there's no reason for these idiots to think that she wasn't. And there's more things that have come out, like, if you look at the whole thing. I'm looking forward to this summer, they're having Natalia's side of the story, and I cannot wait to watch that.
Yeah.
It also made me feel really frustrated that whenever that one family took her in after they left her at the apartment in the other city that I've now, Lafayette, when they left her in that apartment and the other family took her in, the dad, Michael, makes them sound like they're some kind of grifters or whatever because they took all of her money and they took her food stamps or whatever. And they're like actually raising her. Like they raised her for the rest of her childhood, because I think, I want to say, was she like 10 maybe? Aaron didn't watch the whole thing, but like she was 6 when she was adopted, and I think she was 8 when they left her in the apartment. And then I think another year passed, so she was probably like 9 or 10 whenever that she was left in the second apartment. Then that family came and got her. Like, yeah, because she's a whole 10-year-old living by herself. Of course they went in and took her in. It just is gross to me that he tries to make it sound like they're taking advantage of her when they're still in her life. They're still her family. Like, the mom took her to court and stuff. And when she was 19, going to court to testify against Michael. So, how are they the bad guy at all? They saw an abandoned child and literally made that child their child.
Yep.
Anyway, so points to them. I think their last name is like Mann or something like that. So the Mann family rocks for stepping in and doing something. I am so obsessed with this case now. And it's so wild to me that like the Barnett successfully made so many people think that she was an adult. Because going into that documentary, I literally thought that they had already proven that she was an adult. And then watching it and realizing that I just had misinformation from the internet was wild. Anyway, it's okay to change your mind about stuff, too, because I know some people refuse to do that. Oh, my God. I am totally obscuring the fact that, okay, guys, locally here in Houston, I know some of you know about this. Aaron's over here laughing because I've been freaking out. Okay, so in the Woodlands, which is just north of Houston, really close to where Aaron used to live, a guy went missing. His name is Colby Richards, and I know a lot of people nationwide have been invested in this case, but here locally, it has just been so much. And then he was gone for a whole week and then was somehow found by a restaurant and lied about his name. But really, I guess I should tell the whole story. Okay, so briefly, if you don't know what I'm talking about, Colby Richards is a father who at first his wife said was an engineer and loving father who had gone and disappeared into the woods at around 5 o'clock in the morning on the Friday before Memorial Day weekend. And he was supposed to go to work that day. And at first she said that he was probably meditating in there. But later on, another story was released that said that he was a long distance runner that had trained, that would train for like 20 mile runs. And he might've been running in the woods. And at some point authorities found a Yeti cup that belonged to him that was just left by like the head of a trail in that area. Now, they made it sound like it was really heavily wooded, but if you're from this area, you'll know that the Woodlands does not have a lot of actual woods. Like, it's a planned community for rich people to feel like they live in the woods. That's basically what it is. Like, there's big houses, and then there's, like, little patches of trees, and it looks like there's woods behind your house. Like, it's very beautiful, but it's not the actual woods. Like, there's another neighborhood, like, on the other side of it, and it's kind of just, like, a place for you to enjoy city life but still feel like you're in nature. And honestly, it just looks really pretty. Like, if you're driving around on their main roads, every single business is hidden by trees. Like, the whole roadway, it has like a tree line that's thick enough, and then they'll just have like a little sign sticking out that's really nice. Like, there's rules about what your signs look like. So even though it has woods in the title and there they call it woods. It's very thin, planned croppings of trees. So they go out, and the police and volunteers and volunteer organizations and all these rescue people, and they search for days looking for him. And they walked over the same patches over and over and over again. They brought dogs out there. It was like a whole thing. Everyone's freaking out. People are worried if he killed himself, or like, did he get hurt? Did a snake bite him? Did like he fall into some kind of hole or something? Did someone kidnap him? There's all kinds of things being thrown out there. But meanwhile, his family won't let us talk about it. So anytime somebody mentions a theory or asks a question that they don't like, they would just delete it. So as a result, on our local Houston Reddit, there was a 2 or 3 main Colby posts on the subreddit. And then somebody just straight up made a subreddit for Colby Richards, which I joined because I have been flipping obsessed with this thing. Since day one, since the first minute, I have been following this and reading everyone's post and like reading people arguing in the comments, like all of the things, just completely freaking obsessed. So for a week, everyone's searching. The police actually pulled out of the search early because they said that there was no proof that he was found or that he was ever in those woods. Like his wife said that he was, but there's like no proof of that. So the police started a different type of investigation that we don't know about what they're investigating. Then on like, I think it was the next Thursday, this last Thursday that we just had, he was miraculously found outside of a restaurant called Uli's, U-L-I-S. And one of the workers saw him trying to drink out of a garden hose that's outside the building and called the police. And so the police come and he supposedly gave them a false name. And then they were just going to leave. So 0 out of 10 for the police. They were like, oh, but it's not him. And then the people at the restaurant are like, it fucking is him. Like, I know what he looks like. We've been doing this for a whole ass week now. So the cops are like, well, they said you lied to us. So anyway, they end up getting him to admit that he's Colby Richards. And they take him to the hospital. And so he's been in the hospital for like, I think since then, essentially, getting evaluated. And there's been a lot of insinuations from the family that he hasn't had food or water this whole time, which has drawn a lot of doubt from the public, because y'all don't know this if y'all don't live in the South, but it is fucking hot here already. Like, it is getting up into like 90 and during the daytime, but it feels like 95 or more because it's so humid. It is so hot and humid here already. It's just not pleasant. Like, nobody's going to be outside this whole time and not have a problem. Plus, we've had some really bad rains, and we've had a bunch of mosquitoes. We get really bad mosquitoes. It's essentially a swamp out here. And if you were outside during this time of year for a whole week, you would be messed up.
Yeah, you would.
So there's been a lot of debate about whether or not he did survive outside. And the family hasn't really given any information. They shut down the Facebook page, which has been depressing for everyone. Not that they were letting us talk on it anyway. But they shut down the Facebook page. We don't know what's happening with the GoFundMe money. I'm not sure if I care as much about the GoFundMe so much as I just really want to know what happened. Like, I don't need to know every dirty detail, but like, did he really just have some kind of break? Or did he leave and then his wife sent out searchers and he panicked? Like, what happened? I really want to know what happened, everyone. This is just more, I think it's morbid curiosity, but I just got so invested. Like, I'm happy he's safe. I just really want to know, like, was it an oopsie or a planned thing? Like, I want to know. And also, there were just so many lies that have come out this whole time. Like, at first they said he was an engineer, but he's not really an engineer. And then the story about what happened to him changed 3 or 4 times. And also, too, there have been reports that people have screenshots from next door that his wife had posted that he disappeared I want to say in 2021, but then like came back. But she said he'd never done something like this before, which would have been inaccurate. Also, what did they say to the police to get them involved so quickly? Because she called the police on the day of him going missing, where her version of events was that he just went into the woods and then didn't come back. But, like, why would he immediately be a missing person? Like, they took the case seriously from day one. So, I mean, which is good, except for, like, why this guy? Because we have a bunch of missing persons over here. Like, for instance, I lived in Beaumont for 10 years, and there's a girl who's missing right now. Her name is Kayalana Turner, and she's been missing for over a month, and she is known to be having a mental health crisis. She traveled from Beaumont to, I think, Tomball, and was on someone's camera footage there in Tomball. And then the police chased her for some reason into, I believe, a wooded area. It's been a while since I read that because it happened like early on. And then they wouldn't let her have a missing persons report because they were treating her as a fugitive because they were trying to talk to her and she ran away because she's having a mental health crisis. And they knew that. The family told them that, and the police still chased her. And so they were like, well, we're going to release an arrest warrant. She's not a missing person. She's a fugitive. And they're like, are you fucking kidding me? So they got them to drop that arrest warrant. But she's still missing. She's been missing for over a month. And, like, the only people that are really talking about it are people that know her. And this other guy goes missing for 1 minute, and he's on the news. Yeah. So it's weird.
It is weird.
And anyway, I'm curious as to why, to what they said to the police to get him looked for so quickly that is different from everybody else. Because, like, Kayalana Turner should have been someone that was looked for immediately by the police because of the fact that she was having a crisis and is still having a crisis. Aaron's making money, is doing the little, like, hand thing where you rub your fingers together for money. Mm-hmm. That, it might be it.
I think that's exactly why it is. Like, he's a white dude from the Woodlands.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Well, he is having financial struggles, according to sources. But he is in the Woodlands.
Yep.
And he is white, that is true. Kayalana Turner is also white, but she's not from an affluent neighborhood of the Woodlands.
Exactly.
Hmm.
I don't
know. Suspicions.
I'm just saying, if you want to know why things happen in this country, like, if you have a question about why is this happening? Why is blank in America... Answer, money.
Money.
Look, there's like one exception to that rule just to make the rule true. Like everything else, money.
Money.
Yep.
All right. Well, if you too want to nosedive into the Coy Richards saga, even though he has been found now, there's a whole Reddit and you can go trace it back. There's a lot of things on there. It doesn't quite have a lot of the beginning stuff, but I feel like you can get caught up pretty quickly. And will we get answers? Supposedly the family was giving us answers, but now they're not giving us answers, so I don't know what's happening. But anyway, I feel like we've talked a lot about a lot of things, and we are going to let you continue on with your day. Thank you for listening. We appreciate you. Don't forget, if you want to listen to more episodes, please do consider subscribing to our feed on your podcast platform that you are using to listen to us, or go over to Patreon. .com/badaxpod or use that link in our show notes to join on Patreon to get some extra content, etc., etc. Also, you can email us at badaxpod@gmail.com. I would love to have your emails. You can also follow us on all the social medias. I did see that some people had followed/messaged, and I'm so sorry. I have not been ignoring you on Instagram. I just totally saw the notification come up and then was like, oh, I need to go respond to that. And then I did not respond to it, and I just thought of it right now. So I apologize. I'm not ignoring you on purpose. And we have a website. It's badaxpod.com. Is there anything I'm forgetting, Aaron?
Only that Bad Axe Pod is the best podcast, and you should all listen to it forever. Start that next episode, y'all, right now. Hit next, and... Or just let it auto-start.
Alrighty. Well, we will talk to you again very soon. Have awesome days. Yay, it's summertime, and we're going to pretend we're excited.
I'm excited.
I want cold weather back. All right. Sorry. I mean, Houston cold.
Yeah.
Not actual cold.
Yeah.
If we had actual cold weather, then I would complain about that. I just want regular neutral weather. Yay!
Yay!
All right, we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.